Hello, I'm Claire White.
And I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. We are here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters and the stories. And today, we are talking about Marvel's Runaways.
Woo!
Woo! The Runaways is a new TV series on Hulu about a group of affluent but mismatched teenagers who find out that their parents are supervillains. They do what every teenager would do. They team up to unite against their forebears, and angsty, melodramatic hijinks ensue. The show is created by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage and is adapted from the graphic novel by Brian K. Vaughan. It stars Virginia Gardner, Lyrica Okano, Ariella Bear, Greg Sulkin, Allegra Acosta, Renzi Feliz, among others. The first episode premiered on Hulu on November 21st, 2017, and as of today, 4 of the 10 episodes have been released. I will be talking about the history of teen dramas. That's what I took from this.
Oh, really? That would be what you'd take, Claire.
Kyle thought he was doing history. He's like, I'm doing the history of secret societies. And I was like,
cults.
I was like, nah, teen dramas.
Teen dramas.
And what are you doing, Kyle?
I'm going to talk about Brian K. Vaughan and Marvel's Tsunami.
On the production side.
On the production side.
So I'm going to take it away. So I'm going to start off, before I talk about teen dramas, I'm going to talk about teenagers and the birth of the teenager as we know it today. So I saw a few arguments that basically say that the term adolescence started in the early 20th century after child labor was made illegal. And basically this second stage of life was created. You're not a kid, but you're not an adult yet. Britney Spears immortalized it in the song, I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman.
Yeah, Not Yet a Woman.
She was
wise beyond her years, that Britney Spears.
Now, the word teenager wasn't actually used till the publication of the Teenage Bill of Rights in 1945 in the New York Times. And it published this to discuss the problems of a growing youth. And it basically defined teenagers as a new type of people that were their own social class, that were entitled to their own specific rights. The concept that we know of as a teenager really caught on in the 50s. And what happened was that they were these middle-class parents who had survived the Depression and World War II, who wanted their kids to have full educations and opportunities that came with those educations. So the kids basically had time and money that they hadn't historically had, and what to do with all that time and money.
Rebel against your parents.
Rebel
That's
against
you do.
The man. This is when teenagers started dictating trends in fashion, music, and film. And if you look at the 50s, there's kind of this wave of all of a sudden, like, what the pop culture is geared towards is the youth. Not that that hadn't happened a little bit before, but this is where the real focus came in. So Rock Around the Clock was one of the first movies to be marketed specifically to teenagers. It was super successful and it inspired Hollywood to pursue a younger audience. And apparently there, in the 50s, the studio system breaking down threatened the profitability of cinema, and that led to a whole bunch of films being centered around teenagers to cater to the younger market because it was a more sure thing.
Was Rock Around the Clock, that's the Comet song, right, that they use
Rock.
At the...
Rock around the clock. I think that's where it comes from. I actually didn't look too hard into the movie itself.
That's interesting.
Because, again, it's not the focus of my segment. It's just a little tidbit along the way.
Yeah.
So these movies, these centered around young people, were brought to new life in the 80s and with the John Hughes phenomenon. And that eventually led to the teen dramas that we have today.
And John Hughes did Breakfast Club and
Pretty
in Pink.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Okay, yeah.
If you haven't seen John Hughes movies, I do recommend them. They're dated, but fun, for the most part.
Yeah.
So early TV shows catered for teenagers tended to be comedies that were super lighthearted, even in the way that they dealt with very serious issues. They were usually only half an hour. Probably the first successful teen drama was Degrassi Junior High, which went on to be Degrassi High. And then that went on to become Degrassi, The Next Generation. I feel like Degrassi now is most famous because Drake was on there.
Drake was on Degrassi. I knew I'd heard that name somewhere before. That's where Drake came from,
I have never watched it, yes.
In Canada.
Yes. It's where Drake the rapper came from. from the teenage drama Degrassi. This was a Canadian show. It aired on PBS in the late 80s and early 90s, and it was one of the first shows that tried to depict kids' lives as they actually were, and they hired real kid actors, not, you know, Hollywoodized, glamorized 20-year-olds who were pretending to be teenagers.
That is one of the funny things about high school movies, movies set in high school, where everyone looks like they're in their 30s.
Yeah, I mean, that still happens today.
Yeah.
Degrassi dealt with being gay, abortion, sexual awakening, flawed parents and teachers. So it dealt with a lot of real issues. Apparently, it was very melodramatic. And it didn't always seem quite plausible, but it was very successful. It attracted one of the biggest audiences in the world for the time for a show made for teenagers. It was aired in over 40 countries and had 3.5 million viewers in the U.S. alone.
Wow. How did I miss Degrassi? I feel like I had never heard
of it
until
born.
Drake. In the early 90s, yeah. I was around.
Like, how old were you, 4?
Yeah, well, how early in the 90s are we talking?
It came back. It was on PBS. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
I think it got overshadowed, as I'm going to talk about later, by other shows
that were
much bigger. No. No. That's an example of a comedy where it does deal with quote unquote teen issues, but kind of. Like, it's super lighthearted.
It's Disney, yeah.
So the 90s is where the teen drama really took off. And do you know what kicked it off?
Not Melrose Place, because that's for
adults.
Oh,
but that's close.
Is it?
It's really close. It's the same creator.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I don't know creators of dramas in the 90s.
Do I not? Beverly Hills 90210 was created by Aaron Spelling, and it's credited with starting off the teen drama genre. Degrassi gets some credit, but in everything that I read, the history of teen dramas, it always comes back to Beverly Hills 90210, and Aaron Spelling took a lot of his inspiration from John Hughes movies.
Okay, that makes sense. Did you watch Beverly Hills 90210?
No, I think I was too young.
Yeah, I didn't really watch it either.
And I don't think I was allowed to watch a lot of TV as a kid, so it just wasn't on the radar. My parents didn't really watch TV.
I sneakily watched a little bit of Melrose Place as a kid, because it was sexy and violent. And
was
I didn't
it sexy
understand.
And violent?
I don't know. I remember some woman taking off a wig and trying to make another woman fall down the stairs or something. It was,
oh, sounds great.
It was bizarre.
So back to 90210. It dealt with teen issues in a heightened setting and in a semi-realistic and serious way. But I mean, it was still campy. But basically, it was trying to deal with teenage issues. It brought glamour to teen life because it was in the, whatever they called it, the richest zip code in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
It had a crazy long 10-year run and became a global phenomenon. It had up to 17.4 million viewers at one point.
That's a lot.
And also a lot of behind-the-scenes drama. The cast became stars for the time.
Yeah.
So 90210 spawned a whole mess of shows. In 1994, My So-Called Life was created on ABC, and it is given credit for depicting the first real look at high school. And it has become a cult classic after it was canceled after only one season. It was actually put in the same time slot as Friends, so it had no chance. And apparently Claire Danes, who was the star of it, wanted to move more into movies, so it might have been renewed, but she didn't want to renew it.
I gotcha.
But a lot of teen dramas kind of say that they were based off My So-Called Life, or they used it as inspiration. There was also Party of Five on Fox.
I remember Party of Five. That had Jennifer Love Hewitt in it,
right? See, I remember Jennifer Love Hewitt from being in middle school because all the guys liked her.
Yeah.
But I never watched Party of Five.
She was hot, man.
I remember, like, she was, like, the top girl.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happened was that the WB, I don't know if you remember the WP and UPN.
I do.
But they really tried to cash in on this audience and marketing their programming as teen TV. So I'm actually going to focus a little bit on the WB here. In 1995, Warner Brothers created the WB as an answer to Fox, which had, as we talked about, Beverly Hills 90210, Party of Five. They had Melrose Place, your favorite, and The Simpsons. Which is pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
And around when the WB was being created, movies like Clueless, The Craft, and Scream were huge hits, and they proved that young people were looking for smart stories about themselves. They originally tried to resurrect My So-Called Life, and that failed, But they used it as a blueprint for shows that they'd produce. So like I said earlier, a lot of later shows were based on My So-Called Life. Some of the shows they produced were Dawson's Creek, a drama about four teenagers, and I think
in... Yeah, they shoot it in Chapel Hill, or no, in Wilmington, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Sure. And maybe that's Wintry Hill.
And actually, Dawson's Creek was created by screenwriter Kevin Williamson. A little known man at the time called J.J. Abrams, made a show called Felicity.
What? That was J.J. Abrams?
You didn't know that?
I did not
I knew
know that.
That. With,
Melissa Joan Hart, right? Or no. Not Melissa Joan. Who was in Felicity?
Carrie Russell.
Russell.
Who does she play in The Americans? Anyway, the hero of The Americans follows her
that.
High school crush to NYU. So a Russian spy follows her high school crush to NYU. Another little known person named Joss Whedon pushed for his then movie flop Buffy the Vampire Slayer to be made into a TV show. Buffy blended comedy, horror, and pathos, and that basically came to define the WB. Other shows that they had were Charmed, Roswell, Gilmore Girls, and Popular. And it was this huge phenomenon for a handful of years. The stars of the WB shows became stars, were on the cover of Rolling Stone. And it was like teenage dramas became the new Brat Pack, which is what they called the actors of the John Hughes movies in the 80s.
Yeah, Molly Ringwald and the Coreys and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Eventually, Buffy left for the UPN. Dawson's Creek ended in 2003, and it became harder to find audiences for programming modeled after past hits. The WB and UPN both closed or were shuttered. And I know the WB shuttered in 2006, but a year later, the CW rose from its ashes and continued to make programming for a younger audience that is still going today. Some of the most popular and famous shows that have happened since then are The OC.
Made by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who made Runaways, or showrunners on Runaways.
Gossip Girl. Teen Wolf, Laguna Beach, Vampire Diaries, Pretty Little Reasons, most recently 13 Reasons Why.
No, you mean Pretty Little Liars.
What did I say?
Pretty Little Reasons.
Pretty Little Reasons.
Pretty Little 13
And 13
Reasons
Liars
Why.
Pretty Little Liars and 13 Reasons Why. Nowadays, there's a teen drama on almost every network, which speaks to its appeal. And kind of the beauty of teen dramas is that you can make them fit into almost any genre. So they're like a genre within genres.
Yeah, because you can take your sci-fi, your fantasy, or your whatever, and you just put teens in the main roles instead.
Make it angsty.
And make it a little angsty, and then you got your teen drama.
And I also read a ton of articles on why teen dramas are so popular, especially with adults. It's a form of escapism. A lot of times the situations are so heightened. So these teens' lives are already way worse than yours. And also, everyone has been a teenager.
Yeah.
So there's almost something relatable to all of the shows in a weird way.
I don't know. I've never been, even when I was a teen, I couldn't get into teen drama. Like The OC was big when I was in middle and high school, and I hated it.
Oh my God. I actually went down a wormhole of watching The OC when I was doing this research because I don't care what you say,
technical,
Kyle.
It's research. It's technical.
It was research. I don't care what you say, Kyle. The first season of The OC is fantastic.
Whatever. I mean, I think I watched a couple episodes because Misha Barton. That was her, right? Misha Barton.
Yeah, Misha Barton.
Yep. I mean, you know, what 14-year-old didn't want to watch Misha Barton on TV? But they were just so dumb. I have a funny comparison to make when we get to opinions about that, actually.
But it's very interesting. Like, now Marvel is trying to cash into that teen drama, making a teen drama about superheroes.
I know. It's full circle. And they're using the people who made some of the more recent really successful teen dramas, Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz.
You could argue that they made two of the greatest teen dramas.
They did with The OC. And people, I've seen a bit of Gossip Girl, and I don't quite get the hype, but a lot of people swear by it.
Listen.
Claire being one of them, apparently.
No, listen. The first... It's the same with The OC. The first season is great.
Yeah.
And then it's like they can't continue it, but that first season is just amazing.
Yeah.
Soapy TV.
Amazing soapy TV.
We can come back to this.
Yeah, we'll come back to it.
Anyway, let's hear about production, Kyle.
I would love to get into some production. So for production, I want to go back to the original comic book and how it got its start. Because when you think about some of the on-the-top specifics of the Runaways comic, it doesn't gel all that well with your typical Marvel flair, especially Marvel in the early 2000s, which was a lot of brooding dude teams, you know, and maybe some women in there with giant boobs and low-cut shirts and costumes and stuff. Like, that was kind of comics in the 90s and early 2000s. But The Runaways was different. It was a team of young teens. It was ethnically diverse, which was also very, which was kind of crazy for the early 2000s. It took place in LA when most Marvel comics were East Coast centric, and it was a team of predominantly women. And how did all that come about? Like, how did Marvel decide to go in that direction? Well, Runaways first appeared in July of 2003 as a part of the Marvel Tsunami imprint. Now, what exactly was Marvel's Tsunami imprint? First of all, Marvel insisted that Tsunami was not an imprint in its initial launch. And what an imprint is, if, for those of you who don't know, is like DC, the comic book company DC, has different imprints that are, you know, more geared towards certain readers.
Isn't
so
Vertigo
they have a Vertigo.
One of them?
Yeah, Vertigo is their imprint, which is a little more adult and geared towards more adults. Well, Marvel was launching something that was definitely an imprint, though they claimed it wasn't. That was more geared towards younger kids and women.
Let's lump those together.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to why. What they were trying to do with Tsunami. So this is a quote from Joe Quesada. Tsunami is not an imprint. For a lack of a better word, it's a movement or wave of books that we're attempting, and there will be another Tsunami wave later on this year as well. And that's Joe Quesada, who is the editor-in-chief for Marvel at the time from a press conference on January 22nd, 2003. And the Tsunami imprint was an attempt by Marvel to cash in on a certain very popular comic book form / storytelling style, manga and anime.
I feel like we talked about this in our Forbidden City.
Yeah,
the,
we
the
did. Well, we talked about
city.
How manga was blowing up at this time.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So Marvel saw that manga and anime were getting really popular, and they kind of tried to cash in on it, but I mean, you'll see they didn't do that great a job of it, and it was very unfocused as to what they were doing. So this is another quote from that 2003 press conference by Joe Quesada. This is Joe Quesada speaking. What you're talking about with anime and manga combined is a real reversal in the way kids' trends travel around the world. It used to be the U.S. first, and then properties would move to Europe and Japan from the United States. Three of the great sensations over the past few years have been Power Rangers, Pokemon, Digimon, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Is riding that to that level of prominence, all coming from Japan to the U.S. We're going to be right in the middle of that Marvel way. These books are all written by people who understand that storytelling style. They're all very accessible to new readers. There's a lot more human interaction. There's real love stories. There's female heroism. There's lots of teenage angst and love. That's what these books are all about. So you can see Marvel was really trying to go in a new direction and capture some younger readers and women with exciting new stories and characters. But the thing is, with the Marvel Tsunami imprint, they didn't really, like, try to emulate anime in any meaningful way, it seemed. Like, they would kind of draw their comics in that manga art style, but other than that...
And that was how they emulated anime.
That's how they emulated
okay.
the anime.
We're doing air quotes.
Yeah, it wasn't all that focused. Like, it didn't seem like they had an idea as to how to emulate manga. They just got some people who maybe read a manga and were like, hey, make our comics more like that, because those are popular right now. So the names spearheading the Tsunami line were Namor, who is Marvel's Aquaman, for those people who don't know, a solo Venom comic, Sentinel was about a young boy who makes a giant robot friend, a Sentinel from X-Men, which is Big Hero 6, very manga. Well, it's very Japanese, you know, big robot anime. Mystique had her own solo series in Marvel Tsunami, and a little-known project by Brian K. Vaughan called Runaways. Now, the Tsunami imprint was mostly a failure. A majority of the comics that were released on it were canceled before conclusion or were not carried over from Tsunami to regular Marvel after the discontinuation of the Tsunami line, which it was launched in 2003 and it was discontinued in 2003.
Oh, geez. It was just like that.
Yeah, it did not do very well. And Runaways was one of those comics that was also canceled. The funny thing about Runaways was that after its cancellation, the sales of its trade paperbacks was high enough, it kind of became a cult comic that was resurrected in 2005 for another run.
And that was also by Brian Vaughan, right?
It was. It would later be taken over by Joss Whedon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is funny because he's also making these teenage, you know, dramedies. Or, no, I guess not dramedies, but dramas.
Dramas.
Dramas, real dramas. Buffy the Vampire Slayer had humor. in that Whedon style. But anyway, so yeah, the Runaways kind of, it launched with not that much success, but it gained a following, and by the end of it, the trade paperbacks are selling really well, which is something that we talked about in our Beowulf episode about Image, is something that Image Comics does really well. And Brian K. Vaughan had a history of doing some pretty successful self-published comics. Or, not self-published, but creator-owned comics. Now, Runaways got off to a pretty slow start because it was a very different comic for its time. It was predominantly made up of characters created by Vaughan. And this comic of completely new characters was dropped amongst a bunch of books of well-established and known characters from the Marvel Universe. People like Namor and Venom and Mystique. And it was very different than what Marvel had become. In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter from November 20th, 2017, by Josh Wigler, Vaughn said this about Runaways' inception. "I love Marvel Comics. I revered Stan Lee. I continue to, obviously. I really want to know what a 21st century Marvel comic would feel like. I love the simplicity of Marvel's concepts, and also the integrity of intent. Spider-Man is, with great power comes great responsibility. Daredevil is, justice is blind. Hulk is the exploration of the monster trapped within the man. There's just such clarity and force to it. I wanted something that was simple, but also felt a little bit subversive. If the DC characters always felt a little austere and more like your dad, it felt like the Marvel characters were rougher edged. I wanted to reverse engineer what Stan Lee might make if he was starting to make comics in the early 2000s. Which makes sense, because when we've talked about Stan Lee making comics a lot and the difference between Marvel and DC back when Marvel was created, and the characters like Spider-Man were younger, the X-Men were teenagers, and they're dealing with more people problems. And
they have real life problems where they have problems holding down a job, or they don't have money to pay rent, and or they can't get the girl.
Exactly. And that's something that Marvel Comics started on, but sort of got away from into the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah. Especially if you're using the same characters, it would get hard to keep doing that
over and over. And so
you'd think they'd work it out.
Yeah, you'd think, but you know, they had their formula that was working. So
right, Daredevil never does. So.
No, he never gets it together. But he also doesn't always stay a kid. He does age, you know. So Vaughn really wanted to capture the mind of a teen in 2003. He says, "I wanted to take a bunch of characters who, instead of revering their parents, rightly didn't trust them. It felt like an exciting change and something I thought a lot of young readers would be able to identify with." Which is true. Like, he does a great job writing teens, and there's just something so wonderful about a comic geared towards teens where a bunch of teenagers find out that their parents are actually evil.
Right, and
you think that they're evil when you're a teenager, but a comic about them actually being evil is pretty funny.
And the thing is, like, at the time, there probably weren't a lot of, if any, comics written about teens that well.
Yeah, definitely not. And you think the X-Men started as teens, but they age up too. And they don't deal, there's not as much parent issues in X-Men as often. This is really focused on teens growing up, going to school, finding out their parents are evil. It's pretty great. Now, when it comes to adapting the comic to screen, Vaughn says it's been a funny and wild ride. He apparently was asked to write a script for a film version of it for Kevin Feige, but ultimately that script was passed over for an even lesser known comic book film adaptation, One Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's funny because Vaughn in the interview talks about how when that happened, when he penned this script for Kevin Feige and was like, "Here," and they were like, "Oh, we're going to go with the Guardians of the Galaxy movie instead." He was like, "What? No one's heard of Guardians of the Galaxy. At least some people know about Runaways." But, I mean, obviously,
No one's complaining.
Obviously, Guardians did really well. And Vaughn says it with, like, some humor. He's not taking punches at Guardians of the Galaxy. Vaughn also says it's funny how quickly Runaways became a Hulu show after initial talks, because Vaughn has been working in the TV industry since shortly after Runaways. He became a writer on Lost in 2004. So he knows a bit about the TV industry.
Abrams.
With J.J. Abrams, it's true.
Creator of Felicity.
Yep. And he has apparently been in the long, arduous process of getting his comic Why the Last Man made into a movie for almost 15 years. Mm. And Why the Last Man was the comic that really put Vaughn onto the map and is the story of the last man left on Earth after a plague kills off all male species of everything, leaving only women. According to Vaughn, shortly after meeting with Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, the showrunners, the project was greenlit and pre-production began. And Vaughn says that he is a big fan of Schwartz and Savage, and he loves the direction that they are taking the story. And he thinks that it is really important that Schwartz and Savage make it their own, and he thinks that they've done a phenomenal job about that. Now, as far as Schwartz and Savage running the show go, Josh Schwartz has always been a big fan of Brian K. Vaughan and The Runaways for a long time. He said it was one of his favorite books. And in fact, in The O.C., in one of the characters' rooms,
Seth.
I don't know who, Seth, there was a poster of Why the Last Man on the wall of his room. It's like an ode to Brian K. Vaughan.
I don't remember that, but that character is definitely Seth.
Yeah.
He had that.
Okay.
The best character.
Is he the best character?
Sure is.
And Josh Schwartz said this was him, like, sending out little signals, hoping that Brian K. Vaughan would see that one day they could work together on something. And when Schwartz and Savage found out that Marvel was thinking about doing a Runaways show, they pitched hard for it and wanted to be the ones that were going to run the show. And Stephanie Savage had never read the comic, and Josh Schwartz didn't want to do the show unless Stephanie wanted to do it as well. So he gave her the comic, and she said she loved it. She loved the characters and how, like, it is a pretty personal story about, teenagers and their relationships with their parents at the end of the day. And so that's how the show got made.
Wow. That makes sense, though, especially for the kind of shows that, Schwartz has made.
Yeah.
That he would like The
would
Runaways.
Would like The Runaways, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, but do we like The Runaways?
How is it done, though, critic-wise? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I meant to say that. Critically, it's done extremely well. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has, 82%
oh, wow.
critic score, which is huge, and 94% audience score.
Wow.
So, yeah, people really like it.
Are we those people?
No, we're not. I don't think it's targeted at us, though, Claire.
It
to
is,
be fair,
though.
To be fair.
It is.
I don't think
it's
it
targeted
is.
At me, Kyle.
Is it?
Yes. I love teen dramas.
Okay,
and
that's
I
true.
I love The Runaways.
Yeah.
Hello.
So, Claire, I wanted to ask you this because you just read the comic recently.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the comic?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. The thing is, part of the reason I wanted to do this topic was because I wanted to read The Runaways. It was just like an excuse, not an excuse, I don't need one, but a reason to just sit down and read The Runaways.
You know, cracks the whip towards getting you to read it. And you and our producer are huge Brian K. Vaughan fans.
I have read a decent amount of Brian K. Vaughan. I've read a lot of Saga, Paper Girls we talked about earlier. I feel like I've read other of his things as well that I'm just not thinking of. But anyway, I just think he's a great storyteller. I think he does do really interesting characters, and I think he does different characters than what you normally see. Like you were saying, girls, and that it was a mixed race cast. I think in his other comic books as well, that's a factor. I only read the first 18, the original.
That's the only Runaways I've read as well.
Yeah, it's great. You love that too, right?
Yeah. That was one of the first comics. Most of my comics were given to me by my older brother Brendan, who is a big Vaughn fan. And this, I remember him giving me this pretty early on when I was in like middle school or maybe early high school. And yeah, it's I feel like it's perfect for that age group.
It came out in 2003.
Came out in 2003. Yeah, I was in eighth grade.
Yeah, I was in high school. So, it is perfect. And it's so funny to watch it and that the styles and, I resonate with that high school because that was me.
Yeah.
My parents weren't evil villains that I know of.
That you're aware of. They might be.
They might be. And I also love in the comic, like, when they first find out that their parents are villains, it's such a conflicted feeling because, you're angry at your parents, of course, and they're not perfect, but they love their parents.
Yeah.
And that they don't want to believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's established we both like the comic. It's also established we both are not huge fans of the show. What don't you like about the show?
Okay. So, these people, Jason Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, made The O.C. and Gossip Girl, which are probably my two favorite teen dramas, the ones that I've really stuck with. And I feel like it's missing the humor. Like, it's so melodramatic, and there's so many slow-mo shots. But the thing that made The O.C. and Gossip Girl great was a really soapy, dramatic, angsty story, but it was mixed in with humor. And it was really funny. Like, Seth Cohen, that character I was talking about on The O.C., he's just the comic relief in The O.C., and it wouldn't be a good show without him. Like, all the references to, like, he's, in this rich neighborhood, and he's playing Magic the Gathering, and, his video games and all
awesome.
Of that, but he's around all these really cool people who would never touch it,
Yeah.
That's what's missing, I think.
Yeah. I am not huge on how much perspective of the parents we get. And it's funny because in the interviews with Schwartz and Savage and with Vaughn, they talk about how they really wanted to make sure you get more perspective of the parents in the show, because in the comic, you don't really get any perspective from
you
the parents.
You get some perspective of the parents.
You get some, but not a lot. Not as much as they give in the show. And in the show, you know, Schwartz and Savage and Vaughn are talking about, oh, you know, we're, in age-wise, we're a lot closer to these parents now, or are closer to these parents than we are to the teens. And so for us, it's really fun to explore what the parents would do. But in my mind, I'm like, I don't care about the parents. I want to see more of the, like, the actual runaways, the kids, you know?
I kind of didn't care about either.
No, really?
It made me really sad because I really wanted to like this show and I was so excited for it. I just felt like it was just really slow moving. The plot was frustrating. And, the decisions that the characters make are just a little bit too, even for teenagers, they're a little bit too out there. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Or things that are super dramatic that I don't think would be that dramatic. You know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like in other teen dramas that I love, yes, things are overly dramatic, but you kind of see the reasoning behind it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about, I just could never get into teen dramas in general, and that's why, like, The Runaways is doing really well, and I just feel like it's not targeted for me. I loved the comic, and it was funny, because in 2004, 2005, I was in high school reading that comic while everyone around me was watching and talking about the OC. And now it's the people who made the OC making this comic into a show.
It's all coming together, Kyle.
It is. It's a full circle or something. But
so to take this on a completely different tangent, this is something that I actually was thinking about a lot when I was doing my research, was the teenage years. And we know whenever you do teen dramas or teen literature or teen movies, it's a bunch of like angsty people who don't have anywhere to put their energy. And then I started wondering, like, are those teenage years necessary? Should we just be working?
Should we just be child laborers?
Like, the thing, like, what good have teenagers brought to the world?
Christopher Paolini, he wrote Aragon as a teenager, right?
Not that, you know what I mean.
Though. Yeah, like, no, I know what you mean.
You know,
though.
Like, they talk about the greatest generation, which I obviously had its flaws, and then the baby boomers came in, and what have they given that the teenage, you know, the greatest generation gave? And yeah. You're like, yeah, and they were teenagers. The greatest generation wasn't.
Yeah, we should all just be working in the quarry as teenagers.
That's what I took away from the Runaways. Not really. I did hate my teenage years, though.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember ever hating my parents as much as some of these that happens in these teen dramas. But I do remember, you know, parents aren't cool. You don't want to hang out with them too much.
No, definitely.
You don't trust them either. You're like, But I just think it's a credit to Vaughn. I feel like that's super clever of writing a story about teens, and teens inherently don't trust
Well, the thing is, the best teenage literature, you really see that perspective.
Yeah,
and whether
that's
they
true.
Trust or they don't trust the adults around them, you understand
yeah.
it. And I feel it has become a lot more popular lately. And it's like we talked about, there's this whole market that people, like, I think almost every level of all arts industries are gearing towards, like music, movies, TV, comics, books, you know, YA is so huge.
Yeah.
But the greatest writers of those, or, you know, creators of these, you know, teen stories, they understand the teenager's perspective.
Yeah, and they capture that emotion really well.
Catcher in the Rye.
I hate Catcher in the Rye.
I do too, but I loved it when I was a teenager.
Okay.
And, you know, but I think he doesn't trust the adults around him.
Yeah,
or the
that's
adults
true.
That he does trust aren't always trustworthy.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something that Salinger really captured there. And that's why it still resonates with so many teenagers. It resonated with me.
Yeah.
As an adult, I'm like, what a whiny brat. Like, shut up and get it done.
Yeah, no, Holden Caulfield, God. I mean, I don't know. This might be heresy to say, but maybe Vaughn is somewhat of a comic book modern-day Salinger.
Maybe. I think he's, I don't think that's heresy. I think he's the top of the game.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think he's
and
one
also,
of the best comic writers out there.
What's Paper Girls?
Yeah.
About teenagers, and it's great. Saga's not about teenagers, and Saga's great. But.
Yeah.
So, we recommend the comic book.
Definitely recommend the comic. It's a little dated because there are a lot of early 2000s references in it, but... And it's angstier than I remember it being, but then at the time I probably didn't think it was angsty at
exactly.
all. I was like, oh, it's my life.
And we don't recommend the TV show. However, we are in the minority.
Yeah, we certainly are.
Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Claire White.
And I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures in Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com. We would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. You can find the show on Twitter at dsrapodcast. I can be found at Along With Claire, that's C-L-A-I-R-E.
I can be found at Klex303, that's K-L-E-X-303.
And you can find our producer James at James Fowey Jr., that's James Fowey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R, on Twitter. You can learn more about The Runaways and teenage life on our Facebook page, where we will be posting some of the articles that we used. Our producer, who is definitely that parent that you don't trust, is James Fowey. Our logo is done by Patty Highland, and as a parent, I think you could go to Patty with your problems.
Probably.
And our theme was composed by Pete Rowan, who just wouldn't want to hear your problems. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures in Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.